This podcast is intended for investment professionals only. All investing involves risk.
Hello and welcome to Market Talk. Today we're going to discuss evidence that US tariffs are finally having an impact on inflation, volatility in Japanese government bonds, and the reasons behind the latest rise in tech stocks in the US and elsewhere in the world. My name is Harry Brooks. I'm a content manager in L&G's asset management business, and I'm delighted to be joined, as usual, by Ben Bennett, Head of Investment Strategy Asia, who joins us today from Singapore. Ben, it's been about a month since I caught up with you last time. How have you been?
I've been very well, thank you very much, Harry. But we moved a couple of days here in Singapore this week. I managed to escape the typhoon in Hong Kong that was devastating. Yeah, over the weekend, it was a T10, which is as bad as it gets in Hong Kong. But yeah, my flight wasn't cancelled. I managed to come to Singapore for the wonderful weather here. There's no typhoons in Singapore.
Excellent. Well, I'm glad you could make it and be with us today. So let's kick off with the US, as I mentioned at the start, where last week inflation came in at 2.7% for June, up from 2.4% in May and a bit ahead of expectations. From what I've read, it sounds like this is the evidence that market watchers have been waiting for to show that President Trump's levies are pushing up consumer prices. As a non-expert, though, looking at the line chart, that increase looks quite modest, certainly in comparison to the sort of rises that we saw between 2021 and 2022. Is this a big deal? And how have markets digested this latest data?
I'd say most investors, economists expected the tariffs, increasing tariffs to put up prices, put up inflation at some degree. And it's been interesting, as you say, up until the latest data, that we really just haven't seen that in inflation in the US. And maybe, I mean, you can sort of think about it with hindsight, can't you, that I guess some people have been front running the tariffs in terms of buying more inventory when the tariffs weren't high. There has been, I guess, as well, some circumventing the tariffs. Perhaps some manufacturers have switched their production into countries that had lower tariffs than the bigger ones, and that's kept it down. But we have the latest data, as you said, the latest inflation data. You could see an uptick if you dig into some of the sectors that you would expect to have tariff impact. So things like, I guess, household furnishing, sporting goods, toys, you know, a little uptick. It is small so far, but perhaps that is, the sign that it's going to accelerate. And look, I still do think that inflation risks are to the upside. There's a lot of other stuff going on. The spending bill, the recent spending bill, that's going to lead to more spending potentially by the US. So that could lead to stronger demand, which could be inflationary. The immigration rules as well, that could curtail supply of labor, which is also potentially inflationary. If you look at measurements of inflation across markets, I look at the two-year inflation swap in the US. So it's a sort of measure of medium-term inflation expectations. That has been creeping higher as well. So again, I would say investors in general are expecting those tariffs to come through. We have seen the start of it, but frankly, equity and credit investors don't seem to really care about that. We're making all-time highs in equity markets. Credit spreads are still tight, so it's just something to keep an eye on, but it's not really impacting broader markets yet.
Understood. So a small rise, but potentially meaningful. Despite this rise in inflation, President Trump has continued to call for rate cuts, and there's been speculation about the possibility that he might potentially even look to fire the head of the US Federal Reserve, Jay Powell. I'm sure you won't want to join in speculation around that, but I suppose it does raise the interesting question of how much it would matter in theory if Powell were to exit ahead of the schedule. I understand he's due to step down in May and that many of his potential candidates are signalling that they would cut rates anyway. So if lower rates are coming anyway, how much would it really matter if Powell were fired?
I think that it's really a question of independence. And that has been important for investors for a few decades now. The Federal Reserve is an independent body. I mean, President Trump can nominate the chair of the Federal Reserve. But that's still going to get through the Senate, and he can't nominate all the members, the voting members of the Federal Reserve. So there is an independence there. And actually, that they're independent because they are meant to offset or at least manage monetary policy with an eye on where the fiscal policy, the sort of government spending is in the US. So if the US government spends more money, which would potentially lead to higher inflation, maybe the economy running too hot, then the Federal Reserve could offset that by keeping interest rates high. But if you were to allow one person or the government to set monetary and fiscal policy, we've seen in years gone past, haven't we? I mean, in the UK before 1997, that it ended up in more booms and busts, didn't it? So that's the problem if you don't have independent policy. So it does matter if Jerome Powell was to be fired and replaced by someone who could be influenced more aggressively by the government. I think that would matter. I think investors would reassess whether or not the US has got potentially long-term inflation under control. So, yeah, it does matter. But there's a few meetings coming up which are pretty important. There's a meeting at the end of July. Markets are not pricing in any change in that meeting. So they're sort of, let's just wait and see how that inflation runs through. If we are to see more inflation, there's definitely that feeling, isn't there, behind the Fed, the wait and see. Maybe by the next meeting after that, which is the middle of September, there'll be enough data to suggest that we could trim interest rates by 25 basis points. There is a risk of that priced into markets. But I do think Powell is still in the wait and see camp. I think we're going to keep those interest rates where they are for now and see how see how inflation develops over the next few weeks.
Well, no doubt we'll return to that topic in the next Market Talk episode when we catch up next. Moving on from the US, Japan's government bond market has seen some big moves recently. I think the yield on the 10-year bond recently hit its highest level since the 2008 financial crisis. What caused this big sell-off?
There's a little bit of a link with what I was saying before in terms of wondering about independence of central banks and what they might do if they are not independent. So one market reaction of that, if you believe that the central bank isn't independent anymore, if you believe that they're going to be doing the bidding of the government, is as an investor, you would demand more yield for longer dated bonds, because you'd say, look, I want to have some more risk premium for lending you money if you're going to be not quite as strict in terms of you trying to control inflation. Yeah, I'd like some more risk premium. And we've seen curves steepen a little bit across the globe. So longer dated bond yields going up a little bit more than shorter dated bond yields, putting in that risk premium. And it's definitely been the case in particular in Japan. So what's been going on in Japan? Well, inflation has been creeping high in Japan, and that's what they want because inflation was too low. Central bank has been keeping interest rates very low, though. They haven't been hiking interest rates. So I think investors are starting to think that they'd allow inflation to creep even higher. So that's been pushing long-term interest rates up as well. And then there's been some political events. So there's been an upper house election just last weekend, which led to the ruling coalition losing their majority in the upper house. So there is now talk about, what does that mean? Would the prime minister resign? Will there need to be more different members of that coalition? Would those members of the coalition, which is what they've said, would they like to ease fiscal policy, give more money out to the population who are suffering from this higher inflation? That's the mentality. And if that's the case, all these things added together, easier fiscal policy, inflation going up, central bank not hiking interest rates, that's why longer-term bond yields have been going higher in Japan. And this is all in the backdrop, as we know, in Japan, there is a big debt to GDP of the government sitting there. So they need to fund an awful lot of government debt in Japan. So all of this tends to have a big impact on those yield curves.
So as you say, several different factors all coming together there to affect that yield that we eventually see. That another kind of angle that I read about this week was that there's basically a supply-demand imbalance with the government trying to sell too much longer-dated debt, which the argument goes is pushing down prices. What do you reckon to that?
Yeah, I mean, those sorts of arguments are a little bit circular. You could argue the opposite. You could say, which is what we think to some degree, that the Japanese Ministry of Finance, in terms of funding their deficit, they could choose not to issue any long-term government bonds. They could issue short-term government bonds if they believe that the curve is too steep. That means that they're paying excessive amounts of money, interest, for issuing 30-year bonds. Maybe they just decide not to do that, and it's well within their control to issue shorter-dated bonds. So if anything, on our sort of active rates interest government bond desk traders, we are looking to oppose that steepening because we think that the government has full control over that. And at some point, they'll decide that's just too much. So if anything, we're looking for the curves to flatten at some point going in the future. Right now, the momentum is still with the steepening. But we think there is some point where everyone just realizes that that's too steep, that's too much, and the curve starts to flatten again. That's what we think.
These sort of circular arguments seem to crop up quite often, don't they, where the framing sort of dictates how you understand these things. Okay, well, regular listeners will know that you generally feature a number of the week in Market Talk, but this time I've got a number that I thought might be interesting to dig into, and my number is $4 trillion. Have you got any guesses what I might be referring to?
Is it possibly the market cap of a large company that's benefiting from the AI trend? Is that what it is?
too easy, Ben. Yes, I'm talking about Nvidia, the chip maker. I'm interested in its journey so far this year. At the start of the year, we had the release of the Chinese AI model DeepSeek, which caused a big wobble in Nvidia shares. And then in April, it was one of the stocks that sold off very heavily when President Trump first announced his plans for widespread tariffs. But since the trade tensions eased in May, the shares have done really remarkably well. What has supported this big run-up that we've seen over the past several months?
Yeah, it's incredible, isn't it? $4 trillion, it's just worth repeating. That's a massive amount and really has been driven again by the AI boom. I think, look, at the beginning of the year, Nvidia had an amazing last year. Lots of people had bought it. Sentiment was very high. And often when that happens, you can get these corrections. But it's clearly been a correction in the middle of a long-term bull market because it's reached another high. And in terms of triggers around that to resume the gains from last year, you could point to the fact that the US government is allowing Nvidia to sell some of its better chips to China, having banned it earlier. So sort of reopening that, and that feels like it's a little bit of a thawing of the trade agreement between the US and China. China is now allowing some of their restricted rare metals that they had been restricting to be sold. It sounds as though they're now allowing those to be sold into Europe, into the US. There's a little bit of a negotiation there, but that's benefiting Nvidia. I think the demand from retail investors is still very strong for Nvidia. That's powering it ahead. And look, frankly, it still makes tons of money. I mean, this is a company that's benefiting from a real trend. And whether or not you believe or whatever AI does in terms of productivity, how you can pay for it, we know that Nvidia is selling the processors that enable AI. So it doesn't really matter if it makes money in the short run, does it? Nvidia is getting these orders for these chips, doing extremely well on the earnings. From the of the Magnificent Seven, these massive companies in the US, Nvidia tends to report earnings later. So I think their next earnings report is towards the end of August, in fact. But there are other companies that are doing well or part of the Magnificent Seven and actually are reporting this week. I think Alphabet's reporting and Tesla's reporting. We're recording on Wednesday, the 23rd of July, and I think both those companies are reporting later on today. And then we get the other four of the Magnificent Seven in relatively short order.
So picking up on that theme of the real-world application of AI, which of course Nvidia is very involved in, and other companies, I'm always interested in how people are actually using AI systems in their day-to-day lives, their jobs. Do you find yourself using it? What do you use it for, if so?
Well, in Hong Kong, we're not allowed to use ChatGPT. That's blocks but we have stuff at work, don't we? Copilot. That's something that we are using. Actually, we were just talking about it an hour or so ago when we were in another meeting. I was trying to think about answering questions that we get an awful lot from our clients and our investors about funds. We get a lot of similar questions. How can we put those questions in a database and allow AI to answer those questions more quickly, but obviously with some help over us? And also just on the local sort of AI AI stuff. I have been using it to help me in negotiations with potentially renting a new property. It's been quite useful asking advice for how I should respond to stuff. There are clearly huge numbers of real world applications, productivity improving, and it could have massive implications for GDP growth. It's going to have massive implications for labor. Watch this space. But NVIDIA is clearly making the money as we see right now.
Absolutely. So the US tech giants aren't the only ones, though, to have recorded big gains in recent months, as well as some significant volatility, I should add. In your neck of the woods, the Hang Seng index of Hong Kong listed stocks has done very well so far this year, despite a big wobble in April. And South Korea's KOSPI index, I think, has done even better, up something like 30% so far this year. What's been behind these gains? And what do you think could affect sentiment around these two markets, particularly in the months to come?
Well, a little bit of the gains are actually because these two indices, these two countries have been underperforming up until the start of this year. The Hang Seng had a decent end to last year, but yeah, it'd been really under pressure, partly because of the Chinese economic downturn that has been taking place. And again, in South Korea, it's, you know, despite a lot of technology stocks in South Korea, they really had missed some of the gains that we had definitely seen in the US technology shares for maybe some individual company reasons that there have been a few missteps. But this year, yeah, you're right. The Hang Seng is up significant amounts. And we're seeing lots of IPOs, lots of new issuance from companies coming to the market. And I see on my daily commute, lots of people checking their phones to see how these IPOs are doing, their portfolios are doing. So we're definitely getting a little bit of a flywheel going. You know, the market's going up, so we're going to see more companies issuing equities and then people checking and buying it. And some of these IPOs are multiple times oversubscribed. So, yeah. Very strong there. And then the KOSPI in South Korea, one of the main triggers was the election. The new president's been elected, and the hope that could lead to more fiscal loosening, and that some of the technology companies that had been lagging in South Korea are now starting to do a little bit better. So that's been driving that. But huge returns in South Korea. As you say, up over 30%. That's been massive.
Meaningful gains there. So having already snapped up NVIDIA's market capitalization as your possible number of the week earlier on, I'm sure you've managed to find something else for us this week.
No, actually, I'm going to use your $4 trillion US dollars, because I was just thinking as you were saying I saw a headline in Reuters earlier this week that is the market cap of the crypto universe as well. So NVIDIA or cryptocurrencies, that's a question, isn't it? Personally, I'd rather have something that generates tons of earnings. You can see that the crypto market has been accelerating significantly. We had that crypto week, didn't we, in the US Parliament, the Congress. They were passing a few new laws that were boosting the price of that around stable coins, etc. I'd still come back to the problem with cryptocurrencies. Well, problem, I mean, it's an asset class that's huge, of course. So you really have to think about what it's useful for. So far this year, it hasn't been a safe haven, unlike, say, gold, which also has no yield, hasn't been a safe haven. I'd say if you look at the charts, cryptocurrencies generally fell as equity markets also fell around Liberation Day and are now back up to the all-time highs, as we're seeing equity markets, all-time highs. So great, that's been a tremendous return. But it's not the same. It hasn't been the same as gold, which has been much more of a safe haven, even though, like I said, both of them you could say are similar sort of stores of value, zero yielding instruments. So all-time high, but you just got to think about what it's useful for.
Yeah, what's it for? That's a big question, isn't it? Well, Ben, thanks so much for talking to me today. Really fascinating conversations, as always. And thanks to all our listeners at home as well. I hope you can join us next time on L&G Talks Asset Management.
As a reminder, this podcast is intended for investment professionals only and shouldn't be shared with a non-professional audience. The views expressed in this podcast are those of L&G's Asset Management Division, as at the date of publication. This podcast is for informational purposes only, and we're not soliciting any action based on it. The information discusses general market, economic or political issues, or industry or sector trends. It does not constitute research or investment, legal or tax advice. It is not recommendation or advertisement to buy or sell securities or pursue a particular investment strategy. Assumptions, opinions, and estimates are provided for illustrative purposes only. There is no guarantee that any forecasts made will come to pass. No party shall have any right of action against LNG in relation to the accuracy or completeness of the information contained in this podcast. Where this podcast contains third-party information, the accuracy or completeness of such information cannot be guaranteed, and we accept no responsibility or liability in respect of such information. Not for distribution to any person in any jurisdiction where such distribution would be contrary to local law or regulations. Copyright 2025. Legal and General Investment Management Limited is authorised and regulated by the Financial Conduct Authority. Unless otherwise stated, references herein to LNG, we and us are meant to capture the global conglomerate that includes, in the European Economic Area, LGIM Managers Europe Limited, authorised and regulated by the Central Bank of Ireland as a UCITS management company pursuant to European Communities Undertaking for Collective Investment in Transferable Securities Regulations 2011 as amended, and as an Alternative Investment Fund Manager pursuant to the European Union Alternative Investment Fund Managers Regulations 2013 as amended. In the USA, Legal and General Investment Management America, Inc., a US SEC regulated investment advisor. In Japan, Legal and General Investment Management Japan, KK, a Japan FSA registered investment management company. In Hong Kong, issued by Legal and General Investment Management Asia Limited, which is licensed by the Securities and Futures Commission. And in Singapore, issued by LGIM Singapore Pte Limited, company registration number 20223187 6W, which is regulated by the Monetary Authority of Singapore. For full terms and conditions, please visit our website. To find more content, you can check us out on LinkedIn or on our website.